for what it says up there, competitive advantage. So often these are two terms that don't necessarily go together, because obviously storytelling, well, honestly, isn't a little bit unprofessional versus the kind of strong business results we want to see in our business. So I want to touch on a few different things. I want to set the scene here. We're going to talk first of all about the pressing business problem that I come across, and perhaps you come across on a regular basis in business. We're going to talk about an ancient Irish word and a concept called mettle. Look at the joy of storytelling, and also have a little look at our Riverdance culture and the way that we actually transmit this culture abroad, overseas and so on. So what you're about to see is very much what I call an Irish perspective on the world. But before we do that, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you what matters to you. What matters to you? What really matters to you? Because when Aidan actually asked me to come up and speak here tonight, I asked him, well, what do you want me to talk about? There's a wide variety of things we could talk about. And he said, something that actually matters to you. So, to tell you the truth, I didn't actually have to spend long thinking about this. That's the nicest one.
That's his kids.
These are two actors.
Looks, I think, he's put up a slide.
So these are my two children, Evan and Rosalie. And of course, they're not embarrassed by this moment because they're not here tonight. I won't mention the other thing that actually matters to me because she's sitting over there at the moment and might be embarrassed. But, you know, they don't look like that anymore. Basically, they've grown up and they've gone on in lots of different ways. But when you're a dad or a parent, you know, they always look a certain way to you all the time. You have your own pictures which you carry through your life with you. And around that time that particular picture was taken, in the mid-90s, it was kind of an unusual time in our own family life. Because I'd moved from a job in the USA, and I wanted to be back closer to the tribe, back in Ireland. So, of course, the most natural thing to do was go for a job in England. And at that particular time, I was actually going for that particular job, and we were going through a number of different interviews. In fact, when I think back in it, I had to see about 8 people in a row. But what was most peculiar about that particular series of interviews for that job in England was the fact that as I walked in and as I started to talk, my particular Irish accent, I started to get all these smiles from the various, mostly English people, actually going through the interviews. I thought, this is a bit odd. What's going on here? And it turned out about 6 weeks before that, they had just had their sales kick-off where else but in Dublin. And they still had that green hangover that you might get going overseas and enjoying yourself in somebody else's country. What happens in Dublin stays in Dublin. All that sort of thing. And the other thing that kept on coming up in our conversations was this thing, Riverdance. You might remember going all the way back to the early 90s, the big splash of Michael Flatley. That sense of Riverdance starting to hit the world stage. And at the time, and I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but a slightly different definition in our own minds of what we were all about as Irish people. A kind of a new confidence that perhaps went over the cliffs when we actually look at the Celtic Tiger. But going back there to 1995, that time Riverdance and so on, it was probably one of the first times I became aware of how we're actually perceived abroad, how the Irish culture, is actually perceived by people overseas. What sort of things, more importantly, do you actually pay attention to? What can we take advantage of? So time moves on, and over a number of years in England, we decided to relocate back to Ireland. Kids are getting older, you know, the way they want to go to school. Of course, there's no place like the old sod to set up the kids. So back we come to Ireland, and I set up a specific company at the time, that way the mini blog, which evolved into this thing called Persuasive Presentations. But that's not exactly the point I actually want to make here. What I actually noticed when we actually came back was that I also became self-employed for the first time. And I personally have come from what we call a multinational environment. You know, basically where you actually somebody like the Googles and the Apples and the EMCs of this world and so on, sponsoring a local factory, sponsoring a local service depot, whatever it is, here in this particular country. Can I just have a quick show of hands? How many people out there, outside the spotlights, actually work in multinationals at the moment? Just give me an idea. Okay, how many people have, just if you keep your hands up a moment, put your hands up as well if you've worked in a multinational in the past. Okay, if you own your own company, keep your hands up, don't be lazy. If you own your own company, how many people have actually depend quite a lot on multinational business here in Ireland? Okay, right, just get an idea. Okay, so my world, and I'm just using this particular world as an example when it comes to storytelling, was very much the world of multinational. And the interesting thing for me anyway was we started to dig underneath just what was happening in the world of the multinational. And these are 2011 numbers. It was this simple fact, when you look at the actual ball figures, multinational corporations just last year, IDA-supported firms, accounted for around about 8% of all the jobs. But when you start to actually look, and I think this is conservative, for the number of roles actually that add on for that, because your services are actually supporting multinational corporations and so on, it's roughly about another three jobs for every one. So we live in a country, whether we like it or not, that has become very heavily dependent upon inward investment from these multinationals. And as I walked around, we were partners at the time, I started to talk to plant managers, started to talk to the people, actually who look pretty much like this, started to notice a particular problem. Started to actually notice, around about this time of year, and you might be familiar with this, sorry Ian, am I running around too much here? Okay. Started to notice, around about this time of year especially, the time of the budgets, that if you walked into their office, there was a very specific thing on all the whiteboards, drive costs down by 5%, 10%, 15%, whatever it might be. They were under terrific pressure, basically to maintain the investment that the parent company was making into their plant in Ireland. To such an extent, they didn't actually really have means, or not much time in any case, of somehow justifying further investment from the parent company into Ireland. What are these people all doing with these phones, by the way? Are they kind of recording all this stuff and so on, or falling off?
I'm tweeting you. You haven't replied to any of my tweets yet.
That's a heckle, by the way. Okay, very good. What actually became very, very apparent very quick, that they were kind of schizophrenic, these particular people. There was a problem there. On the one hand, they had to justify the investment in Ireland against the pressure of places like Puerto Rico, Mexico, Far East, Spain, all those other alternatives, where basically they HQ might want to actually move the cost of production someday. And on the other hand, they somehow wanted to actually, given the fact that we didn't actually have a market that big enough to attract a lot of these businesses for inward investment, they somehow wanted to attract further investment into Ireland. And the interesting thing for me at least was that we started to ask them, well, just why should it HQ of your particular company